Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, January 6, 2022. Authorities in Jonglei State convinced young armed men to hold off attacks in the Greater Pibor administrative area.
The youth have returned after a long week. The government were engaging the youth who had decided to go to Greater Pibor on a revenge basis.
And what is the future of Sudan without Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok?
We're also, hearing worrying reports that the conflicts in Darfur and South Kordofan may be resuming.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Jonglei State say they have managed to convince a large number of Lor Nuer young men who were on revenge attacks in the Great Pibor administrative area to return to Jonglei State. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Tuong Majuk, the Jonglei State acting governor, says a large number of armed Lor Nuer young men mobilized about a week ago to carry out a revenge attack in the Greater Pibor administrative area. Majuk says the state government formed a committee that succeeded in convincing the men to withdraw back to Jonglei State.
The youth have returned after a long week. The government were engaging the youth who had decided to go to Greater Pibor on a revenge basis. But the authority on the ground in the county in Uror, plus the state here, have engaged those youth for all that period of time. And lastly, the youth have listened to the government and they have now returned to their normal home. Our people have listened to us. And they have now returned, and we also expect the Greater Pibor to do the same.
Majuk says his counterparts from the Greater Pibor administrative area should work with his office to return abducted children and women, as well as cattle taken during a previous attacks in Jonglei State. Weiwal Kong, a representative of the Young Lor Nuer Men, says his group agreed to stop advancing toward the Greater Pibor administrative area if kidnapped victims and stolen cattle are returned. Kong says the two governments of Jonglei and Pibor should meet their demands as soon as possible, or else the men could remobilize to attack Pibor.
The Pibor government should advise the youth because they will not. They need the attacking to the people and abducting the child. So now, youth of Murle, they are in bush. Even we can make the peace now, they cannot near the peace. Those who are bringing the peace last month the Murle youth come and then keep to talk the peace in Botan. They are attacked. They were in attack the other side of the law in Akoba, in Nyerol and Urur.
Last month, authorities in the Greater Pibor administrative area warned that youth in parts of Jonglei State were mobilizing to attack their areas. Jai Adingora Alual, the Minister for Information in the Greater Pibor administrative area, has welcomed the Jonglei officials' efforts to convene their young men to work for peace.
Now that they have come to understand themselves with those who mobilize themselves and they were able to convince it. This is good news for us, and we really appreciate the government, and we hope you will cooperate with the government of Jonglei State. On our side, actually, we have been working hard, and as we speak, even we have people whom we have sent to the ground to different locations, especially to the areas of Nam and so forth, so that they will actually avoid all those criminal activities, because these are the things actually that exaggerated such a thing.
Cattle raid, child abductions and reprisal killings are a common occurrence in Jonglei and the Greater Pibor area. In March 2020, a community-led goodwill agreement between the Lor Nuer, Murle and Dinka Bor ethnic communities was reached at a peace conference held in Uror County. traditional leaders, women, youth and cattle camp leaders attended the conference and discussed a compensation for lives lost and the return of abducted women and children. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
A community leader from Rajaf village in central Equatorial State is calling on President Salva Kiir and the Inspector General of Police to intervene and remove the soldiers who are involved in illegal land demarcations in Rajaf. An elder from the community says soldiers sent to arrest land grabbers are now the ones demarcating land in the area and have destroyed a number of community ancestral property. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Rodenta Tombe, a community leader from Garbo Payam, says since December 31st, soldiers from the South Sudan Defense Force have been involved in illegal demarcations.
Today they graded the roads, and today they are making tracks. And the soldiers who are sent there to guard the people and to prevent the land grabbers, they are the ones who are now doing the job. So for us, it is not something out of the blue. It is something organized. Because if it is not organized, how can a mere people, if they are displaced, they come and they use a grader, a bulldozer, while the soldiers are there?
Tombesi's community leaders raised the concern to the commissioner, the governor, and the inspector general of police. He says yesterday he saw a military flag mounted in the area and military vehicles with some soldiers. Tombesi's a number of permanent buildings constructed have destroyed traditional artifacts in the area.
They graded the land. They destroyed a lot of our ancestors' graves, which we feel that it is not something which is really pleasant. Eh? All the trees are removed, the indigenous trees which are there, which is supposed to keep our values, our norms, are all destroyed. The palm, this is what you call the lep, with fruits, they're all down. And the government is there watching with the guns because you people are coward.
Tombe calls on the Inspector General of Police and President Salva Kiir to act before the situation gets out of hand.
President Kiir to give orders for those people to be removed. And we are still, not now, but I think this is to go to the President. Since the President is the one who constituted the high-level committee, the President is to intervene. Because we don't know whether the high-level committee really giving the President the right messages, or the President just there in the golden cage and somebody says, hey, things are very good there, don't worry.
David John, the spokesperson for National Security, says he is not aware of troops from National Security being assigned in Garbo, but he says the office will investigate the allegations to find out more. Aten Wekaten, presidential spokesperson, says Kiir cannot get involved in every community appeal.
You know, people cannot be removed by order of the president. These are the citizens of this country. I don't think there is any foreigner living there. And if somebody has done something which is illegal or unconstitutional, it should be sought in the court of law. It shouldn't be the president issuing orders for the community appealing here and there so that the president gets in and issue a decree to remove the people that the certain community doesn't want. This is not how the country is run.
Aten says not every problem should be resolved politically. He says the community people should raise their grievances to their county commissioner, and if it doesn't work, then they can go to the state government, and that if that fails, then they can go to courts and seek a court injunction. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Sudanese demonstrators flooded the streets of Khartoum, Omdurman, and Port Sudan, chanting no to military rule as the country plunged into further turmoil following the resignation of Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok. Hamdok said Sudan is crossing a dangerous turning point that threatens its whole survival, adding he had tried his best to stop the country from sliding towards disaster. Joseph Stigley, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, explains to VOA senior analyst Muhammad Al-Ashanawi how serious the situation in Sudan is.
The situation is serious. However, Sudan has been in crisis really since the October 25th coup, when the military effectively hijacked the democratic transition. You know, since that time, there have been estimated 60 protesters who've been killed by the military. Many more women have been raped and other protesters have been injured. You know, more generally, the economy faces a huge crisis. They're looking at 700% inflation. Goods and supplies are increasingly difficult to come by. And this is on top of an economy that has been contracting since the latter years of the Bashir regime and faces huge debt. You know, all of these things are what led to the massive protests we saw in 2019. We're also, you know, hearing worrying reports that the conflicts in Darfur and South Kordofan may be resuming. So the situation is very serious, but it's not because of the Hamdok resignation. Rather, it's because of the military coup and its efforts to derail the democratic transition, which is what would provide a path out of this crisis.
Protest movement insists on a fully civilian government to lead the transition, a demand rejected by the generals who say power will be handed over only to an elected government in July of next year. Protesters have said that 2022 will be the year of the continuation of the resistance as they push for an immediate transition to civilian rule. Hamdok said in his resignation announcement he had failed to find a compromise between the ruling generals and pro-democracy movement. Judging from a long military grip on politics in Sudan, is there a way out?
Well, I believe there is a way out. And in fact, I would say that Sudan was making notable progress in addressing a lot of the factors underlying its crisis. Since the transition began in 2019, we were seeing progress on the economy. The civilian-led government was addressing corruption. The internal conflicts were being resolved. And so there is already a roadmap for how to get out of the crisis. And it involves reinstituting a civilian-led democratic government. The military has undermined this process because it is accustomed to governing. The military in Sudan has been in power one way or another for all but 10 years since Sudan's independence in 1955. However, you know, this type of government, an authoritarian-led military government in Sudan, is what has led to the economic crisis and the hugely underperforming development conditions in Sudan. It's what has contributed to the civil wars that we've seen. So the only way that Sudan is going to come out of this and to get the massive levels of foreign investment that it's going to need to stabilize the economy is with a credible civilian-led democratic government. And that's something we were starting to see since 2019. There was an outpouring of international support for Sudan. So the military really is isolated. You know, it's navigated itself into a blind alley where there's no way it's going to get the assistance that it needs to work its way out of the crisis. It's going to have to negotiate with the civilians to return to a civilian government that will have credibility. And while that may seem unappealing to the military, it has advantages. You know, the military will continue to play an important role in Sudan. It will have an opportunity to professionalize and reform, and it won't be faced with dealing with these internal conflicts. And it should remember that, you know, a stable economy and a growing economy is going to mean more revenues for the military over time. So I think for all these reasons, there is a way forward that can be negotiated.
That's Joseph Sigley, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking to VOA senior analyst Muhammad Al-Ashanawi about the situation in Sudan. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, lawmakers in U.S. mark January 6th, the day supporters of former President Donald Trump stormed the seat of America's democracy. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Where do you get your health advice from?
Sometimes I get my health advice from my grandmother who is at home. When I'm sick that I can't control myself, she'll help.
I get my health advice from my friend, colleague, who live together, well, those who know about, those who have been experienced more problems about health, they don't advise me through phone, we talk, we chat, discuss everything.
My dad, because my dad is a doctor.
I'd say I get my health advice from various places, the internet, my parents, because I have, my mother is a nurse.
My health advice, I get it on the internet. If I need something on how to deal with obesity, I get it on the internet. Anything I need pertaining to health advice is on the internet.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A year after the January 6 riot at the U.S. Capitol building, former President Donald Trump continues to insist the 2020 vote was rigged. In recent months, the former president has pushed Republicans in state legislatures to change election laws. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
I know that everyone here will soon be marching over the Capitol building.
This is the face that launched thousands of angry people on the U.S. Capitol in one of the most stunning days in American history. The few thousand protesters who ended up entering the Capitol that January day sought out lawmakers, in particular House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and former Vice President Mike Pence, as they attempted to formalize Joe Biden's victory over Donald Trump in the November 2020 presidential election. The mob erected gallows, assaulted police and journalists, vandalized, and looted offices. The violence and chaos left five people dead, wounded 138 police officers, resulted in charges against more than 720 participants, and landed Trump a last-minute impeachment, his second, just days before he left office. Trump maintains the poll was rigged in the face of overwhelming evidence that there was no election fraud, as do some of his supporters, who continue to attend his post-presidential rallies.
I'm here to see our rightful president that actually won this election, and I just want to hear what he has to say.
Trump was planning to address his followers again this coming January 6th, but he canceled the event and says he'll instead address his followers at a rally planned for January 15th in Arizona. Observers say he's been busy all year trying to influence sympathetic lawmakers. Jeremy Suri, a professor of history at the University of Texas at Austin, via Skype.
So he's trying to limit voting access in states that have diverse populations or ever more diverse populations like Georgia and Texas. He's trying to get people like Jim Jordan and Marjorie Taylor Greene, two members of Congress, to get them more of their own kind of people elected who will do things such as pursue policies designed to keep immigrants out of the United States, policies designed to take the United States out of its international alliances like the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So he has an America First agenda. He has an ego agenda, and he has an agenda about trying to rewrite history to match his false narrative, and he's pursuing that every day.
If anything, says analyst Suzanne Spaulding, who leads the Defending Democratic Institutions Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, this galvanizing event has only further divided the United States politically. Republicans who spoke out against Trump right after January 6th seem to have gone silent in the past year. More troubling, she said, polls show that one in three Americans believes violence against the government is justified. This seems to have given Trump fuel.
I suspect in that sense he has felt emboldened. I think there was, again, in the very first hours after that, those events, a sense among some of the Republican members of Congress that perhaps this had he had gone too far, and that they thought they had some breathing room to distance themselves. And unfortunately, what seems to have happened is that he has not lost his grip on the Republican Party.
Biden will speak before Congress on the afternoon of the 6th, says White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. And he will continue to bring up Trump's responsibility.
I don't think we've held back on this front. I mean, President Trump's role in subverting our Constitution, attempting to block the peaceful transfer of power, and defending a mob that attacked our Capitol and law enforcement has been well documented. And it's something, obviously, the president spoke about in terms of that being one of the worst days in our democracy.
Trump will likely reference Biden's words during the January 15th rally. But Spaulding says the American people, not politicians, deserve the last word here.
I'm always struck by our national anthem, the words that we sing at ballparks and sport arenas all around the country. That starts with a question and ends with a question. It starts with the question of, is the flag still flying? We saw it through the night, through the battle, but now it's the morning. And the question is, does that flag still wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave? That's how it ends, with a question mark. And all of us must be part of making sure that that answer every day is yes.
So, a year later, which flag is it going to be? Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
President Joe Biden has directed his administration to buy an additional 10 million courses of Pfizer COVID-19 pill. The purchase brings the total to at least 20 million courses as part of his strategy to combat Omicron. He addressed the American public this week as COVID cases in the U.S. surge to record levels following the holidays. White House bureau chief Patsy Widakwasara has this report.
Residents of Washington, D.C. turned out for a snowball fight earlier this week, a sign of normalcy in a winter marked by soaring COVID-19 cases in the United States yet again. Fueled by the Omicron variant, on Monday, the nation's coronavirus cases reached a world record of 1 million detected in 24 hours, according to a report by the Johns Hopkins University.
Today, I'm directing my team to work with Pfizer to double our order from 10 million to 20 million treatment courses to be delivered in the months ahead.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden outlined his administration strategy to address Omicron. In addition to buying more Pfizer COVID-19 pills, he promised to make booster shots and testing more widely available. With Americans having to wait in long lines to get tested, Biden has been blamed for delays and shortages. His administration has not given details on the distribution of the promised half a billion free at-home test kits. Testing is considered key to limit Omicron spread and reduce hospitalization. Dr. William Schaffner is an infectious disease professor at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine.
We can't do very much about inhibiting the spread of this extraordinarily contagious virus. And if it only produces mild disease, we could, if you will, quote, tolerate that while we try to continue to prevent these hospitalizations.
More evidence is emerging that Omicron causes milder symptoms than previous variants, in some places resulting in lower death rates despite soaring case numbers. World Health Organization incident manager Abdi Mohamud.
We are seeing more and more studies pointing out that Omicron is infecting the upper part of the body, unlike other ones, the lung, who has been causing severe pneumonia. It can be a good news, but we really require more studies to prove that.
The U.S. has donated more than 315 million vaccine doses globally, while pledging a total of 1.2 billion doses. Yet some health experts say wealthy nations are not doing enough to vaccinate the world and prevent the emergence of new variants. Dr. Peter Hotez is the dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine.
Until we redouble our commitment to vaccinate the African continent, Southeast Asia, and Latin America, we're always going to have this problem. And that's what has to be prioritized. And so far, neither the U.S. government or the G7 countries have really made that commitment.
On Monday, U.S. health authorities approved Pfizer's booster shot for children as young as 12, with a final approval expected in the coming days. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Cameroon has deployed troops and armored cars to towns that will be hosting matches of the Africa Football Cup of Nations or AFCON tournaments in its Travel Southwest region. Cameroon is hosting the continent's top soccer tournament beginning Sunday, but the region's Anglophone separatists have threatened to disrupt the games. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Residents of Cameroon's southwest region towns of Boya and Limbe say in the past 2 weeks there has been a noticeable increase in troops and military trucks on the streets. The troubled southwest region is one area of Cameroon that will be hosting Africa's top soccer championship, the Africa Football Cup of Nations, AFCON. 21-year-old University of Boya student Fabrice Tobby says security in the city is becoming watertight. He spoke to VOA Wednesday via a messaging application.
I was surprised with the amount of armored cars and the troops entering Buya with the ones that were already there. It's very difficult to leave from one area to the other in the city of Buya without meeting military or security man. In markets and even in student residential areas, they are everywhere. They do the control. it's very difficult for you leaving your house without being checked or controlled.
Cameroon's military confirmed that troops have been deployed to Boya and Limbe to protect football players, officials, and fans for the tournament. A spokesman declined to comment on the number of troops and armored vehicles deployed. The southwestern towns will host group matches for teams from Gambia, Mali, Mauritania, and Tunisia. Anglophone separatists fighting in Cameroon's west to break away from the majority French-speaking nation have vowed to disrupt the games. Tapang Ivor, a spokesperson for the separatist group Ambazonia Defense Forces, ADF. He says the ADF has warned the Confederation of African Football that AFCON matches should not take place in the towns as the group is still fighting there with government troops.
We vow to fight Cameroon military anywhere they are present in the entire territory of Ambazonia, whether it's during the AFCON games that we've banned or after, we will continue to fight them tooth and nail. So we are avoiding a situation where visitors will be caught in this crossfire. So we are advising that AFCON must not hold in Ambazonia for the security concerns of visitors. They shouldn't be present where there is a war going on.
Within the past 2 months, Boya has reported at least 6 attacks by separatist fighters. The rebels took responsibility for November and December bombings at the University of Boya and the town's Great Sopo Market that wounded at least 14 people. The governor of Cameroon's southwest region, Bernard Okalia Bilai, says civilians should report any rebel suspects hiding in their community.
We have been preparing to make the event historic in the southwest region. We continue to sensitize the population, particularly towards vigilant. Well, you know what happened in Great Sopo Market. It is the population themselves who sees the back and they called the gendarme to come and destroy it. That's the behavior, action we are expecting from the population.
Bilai says residents and visitors should not be afraid of the separatist threats. He says the separatists made similar threats when Limbe and Boya hosted matches of the African Nations Championship a year ago without incident. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end the show with Ali Kiba and the song Dodo.
Kupendani vitendo, si maneno maneno. Yuna kupa kitengo, kwa kufika malengo. Umeziba mapengo, kwa upendo upendo. Ebwana wana zingo, anzeni vikao vya sendo fie. Maana, remrembo na kujuza. Mama, na shukuru umekuza. Chana, chema pete na kutunza. Anamba, moja ote waburuza. Na umesha isi mai. Na yo 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 love. Mama yo, mama yo.
We have been listening to Ali Kiba and the song Dodo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us this evening into your homes, vehicles, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
No, I,